like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. Whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Grey Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Hey folks, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you're probably familiar with my year-end rundowns of my favorite local and local-adjacent releases of the year. It's usually this big lengthy thing over multiple episodes, but this time I tried to keep it nice and concise. So here's a few of the 2025 releases that really hit with me last year in a single episode. Some of them are full-length albums, some are EPs, one is, I guess, technically a two-song single, and one's even a collection of songs recorded years earlier, but it's all really good stuff. And of course, I listened to way more local music in 2025, a lot of which was also fantastic, so this is just scratching the surface, but we're already into mid-January, and it makes no sense to spend the next 3 or 4 weeks going over these, so it's a one and done this year. Along with songs from each of the releases, you'll hear clips from interviews I did with the artists, whether that was in 2025 or earlier, and in one case, there's even an interview with someone who isn't in the band in question, but talked about the release on the podcast. So here we go. My favorite 9 or 10, I didn't even count, local releases of 2025. Hope you enjoy, and you can go to the show notes to check out links to the episodes these artists appeared on. Thanks for listening. I figure it makes the most sense to start with the artist I interviewed most recently on this list, which is Uncle Sinner, whose Everybody Wants to Know How I Die album came out right before the end of the year, so it just snuck in under the wire, but it still warranted a spot on this rundown.
Over 5 years, I get enough songs that I'm interested in doing, that I had just enough material for another album. And, you know, people, you kind of want to, I never know if there's going to be another album. So, every time I do something, I'm like, oh, this is like as best, this is as good as I can possibly do. And maybe it won't happen again. And,
yeah.
And to be okay with that, but I'm, if this is the last one, and I'm not saying that it is, but if it is the last one, I think I'm pretty proud of it. And I think it's as good as I can do.
Yeah. Well, that's a good mindset to have, I think, when you've just released something. I mean, it would suck to be the opposite, where you put this out and oh shit, I'm not really a fan of this.
Yeah, just like releasing progressively shittier albums. Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the progression for like artists as they age generally, not universally, but generally. And
yeah, there are a few examples of people, bucking that trend, but for sure it is a thing. Yeah. So
people really liked my second album a lot. They didn't love like Trouble of This World as much, and that's okay. Like those were the songs that I needed to make at the time. And
yeah,
I understand that. And it's not always going to resonate with people, and there are things that I would do differently, of course, but if this is to be my end, then I would have it be such an end as to be worthy of remembrance.
Brother, don't get worried, brother, don't There's a long, hard road, it's got no end. There's a long, hard road, it's got no end. There's a long, hard road, it's got no end. There's a trail that has no turn. Sister, don't get worried.
The next one isn't an album or an EP, but it's a couple of songs, a two-song single released by gospel, soul, and country-loving singer-songwriter Irvin Miller last year. And I had to include it. I'm hoping for big things in the future from this guy. We had a really great conversation. I've seen him live since I talked to him on the podcast, and yeah, just really cool stuff. And this was an exciting release to find on Bandcamp. I didn't even realize he was releasing it, and I discovered it during one of my sort of regular scourings of Bandcamp for local music. And there were some weird audio things that went on in the interview, but what he's saying is super interesting. You hear a song from the release, and just look past it.
When you put on an early Sam Cooke record, like his old-timey gospel kind of stuff, like pre-1957,
yeah,
you're gonna feel a lot different in emotion. Now, these people still feel their own things in their own certain way, just because the content changes. You know, there's soul in every recording now. Some of it, I do think that gets lost in the modern day production, but that's not to say that you know, these people didn't mean what they're saying. You can find the flavor, you can find the seasoning, no matter where you're looking. For me, it's those old timey root styles. You know, it's the blues, it's country, it's soul, it's funk,
yeah,
folk. You know, all that kind of stuff. It's right up my alley.
That's cool. Yeah, right on. It's cool to hear you mention Sam Cooke too, because I mean, that's a guy for sure. I mean, he was with the Soul Stirrers doing the gospel stuff, and then he became a pop star. But even his pop stuff, like you said, that feeling is there, right? Even if he's singing the most lighthearted, you know, non-topical pop song about loving some girl, that's still there. There's an undercurrent of that feeling. And so, I mean, I don't want to talk about Sam Cooke all day. I could. I love him. He's one of my favorite artists. But we're talking about you and talking about what you do. How do you fit then into the local music scene with, obviously, your music leans more towards older stuff? You're not the only one doing that, but it may be a little harder to find sort of where you fit within the community than if you were doing, say, hip hop or you know, folk or one of these genres that's maybe more modernly appreciated.
Most definitely.
There's certainly, you know, sometimes I go to areas and there's a lack of saturation, and I'm in search of this sound that it can sometimes be fleeting.
Sure.
And regionally too, I do definitely bank up a lot of my inspiration on Southern sounds, and specifically the Southern United States. And that's not exclusively though, you know, like a lot of my favorite artists ever have come from, you know, Detroit and Chicago and these sorts of places. I mean, your Prince poster back there. I mean, that's Minnesota born and raised. And I think that I'm new to Winnipeg, Manitoba. I haven't lived here for quite so long. I was born in Nova Scotia, in fact. And even when I'm in Nova Scotia, when I'm in the Maritimes, you know, a lot of local artists are banking on this sort of Celtic folk inspired sound. And I have no problem with it, but it just you know, it never really presented itself to me as an avenue I wanted to follow down. And so I struggle to find like-minded artists, but that's not to say that, you know, it's a problem playing with people or finding other people. There's so many talented artists that understand what I'm trying to go for, understand the vision, everything like that. But I think it presents me with a unique opportunity to insert my own flavor into the city.
Sure.
There's so many talented musicians here and in genres that you wouldn't expect, like the reggae scene, like you mentioned, the hip hop scene in Winnipeg.
Seems like every time I love somebody, I just end up falling for a friend. I just can't settle down. Don't know where my audacity is. Come. 500 horsepower. Anything less will get me there. Yeah. I've got to go now, baby. Ain't got no time to spare. So go ahead.
Scott Nolan's Man on a Wheel is a tribute to his late friend, poet Patrick O'Connell, and it was released at the beginning of 2025 in the form of a book of lyrics and visual art, along with 9 songs that were previously recorded but not released. So I'd heard Scott play a few of these live in the past, and it was really interesting to learn about the context and about the person whose work inspired them. And I didn't interview Scott last year. He's been on the podcast a bunch of times, but I'd intended to reach out, but I just didn't get to it. And so I've included here a very brief clip from an interview a few years back in which he references Patrick O'Connell, who is, like I said, the inspiration behind this release. So I would recommend you check out the book, check out the CD that comes with it, and check out my past Scott Nolan interviews and probably future, because he's one of my favorite local artists, and I'm sure I'll have him on the show again.
My late friend Patrick O'Connell, when he gave me new work of his, particularly gave me a chapbook toward the end of his life called Repertoire for Beggars.
Okay.
And he asked me to read it in one sitting. I remember getting a kick out of the fact that he had give me this work of his, but then asked me, if you don't mind, could you read it in one sitting? And I won't do that myself, but yeah, my hope is that people hear it that way. I don't know if hearing it in the car maybe is, I don't know. But I think it's something that you can kind of engage with.
It might have been the day I walked out on the world, the world and its 10,000 joys, on the night when the wind blows a ghost up my sleeve, and go all the way to emptiness, in the space between the spaces, in the hollow men on sidewalks, giving up a ghost. You could call this a prayer for a man on a wheel, one who goes pleading with the night, somehow wounded by beauty in the tortured light. In your heart, the war itself out, begging for light in the rain, past the stumbling drifters and the barbells, giving up a ghost. Never served me well. I was halfway in and halfway out. Would never serve me well. Never served me well. I was halfway in and halfway out. Never served me well. It never served me well. I was halfway in and halfway out. Never served me well. It never served me well. Halfway in, halfway out, never served me well. Past the stumbling drifters and the barbells, and the hollow men on the sidewalks, as I turned to the gypsy darkness, giving up ghosts.
Folk singer Claire Morrison is a Winnipegger now based in Montreal, but her excellent Where Do You Go at Night LP was recorded across both cities, and we talked about that a lot on the podcast when I had her on last year. And like a lot of the Winnipeg-adjacent artists I interview, the city of Winnipeg and its musical culture is something that continues to be reflected in her music, even though she's based somewhere else. So here's a clip from that interview. You're talking a bit about, we touch on that part of working from both cities, and there's also a song from the record.
What's the difference with this one, I guess? Why is this sort of the debut? Because you've been making music for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, sort of the decision to use that language around it is, you know, to sort of underline the fact that it is my first full-length record. Like, it is my first of any of my projects, actually. Like, with Fire and Smoke, you know, the EP that we put out last year, you know, now because albums are getting shorter and shorter, for some people that is considered an album at six tracks. But, you know, with regards to my project, I had put out an EP in 2013 called Here's to You, Here's to Me.
That's the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, and then in 2020, I think it was, I released a couple of singles that I called the Lucky Light Sessions. So there was a version of You Are Light that was released as a single, and a song called Hands Up. And those were sort of, you know, sort of acoustic, you know, introductions to kind of like where my songwriting was going and what was going to, you know, what maybe to expect on a sort of more fleshed out recording eventually.
Okay.
But in terms of a full length record, this is my very, very first one.
Cool. And so, I mean, you said earlier that you made this sort of between the two cities. How does that work? Because, I mean, I know obviously the way people not only consume music but make music these days is very different. I mean, it's not even 10 years ago. It was a pretty different process. How did that? What is the process of making a record between two cities? Is it certain songs in one place, certain in the other place? Or are you bouncing tracks back and forth with different other musicians? Or how does it work?
Totally. It was crazy. It was like... I really stand by that choice. I really stand by that decision that we made. But it is truly like the most difficult and complicated way to make a record.
I'm
I often have multiple jazz records on my year-end list, but not in 2025. And it's not that there weren't other excellent ones, but this is sort of the record in that genre that really I enjoyed the most this past year. And it's the debut record by a local saxophonist, Ingia. I interviewed her in late 2024, before the album was actually released. So the clip you'll hear here, which is actually from a really interesting part of the interview, is from slightly before 2025, but you'll also get to hear my favorite track from that record. You have these other influences that are coming into your sound that are beyond just the you know, very specifically jazz scope. Do you feel like that gives you opportunities to branch out into other parts of the local music scene? I mean, do you feel like what you do either is accepted already or has the potential to become sort of connected to all these other scenes that focus on other styles?
Yeah, I definitely feel that already. I kind of have been doing a lot more like Afrobeat and R&B kind of stuff right now. So that's been kind of interesting to kind of take the skills and things that I've learned from a jazz context and applying it to other genres.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. But also I think it's just it does help you to be a little more versatile with certain things. And even with my African background, it's really nice to learn about other African cultures when it comes to like music. Even though I'm not necessarily from that country, there's still already some familiarities that I can kind of grasp onto right away. And also with just what are some other things, gospel stuff as well, because I grew up a lot learning like gospel music and stuff like that in the church. So that kind of already kind of gave me a background as well. So it was kind of easy to adapt with certain things and learning things on the fly and by ear and all that stuff. So I do feel that it helps kind of, you know, branch out and keep things a little bit more versatile. And it's kind of cool where you kind of have a gig that's new and different every time. It's not always the same.
Yeah, that's a good problem to have. Is doing that.
Yeah.
As far as the African stuff goes, I feel like there's a lot of people who are not part of one of the many African communities in the city. I think people tend to see it as like a monolith, as it's just this one, you know, broad strokes African music. But then, like, there's obviously so many countries on that continent, and they all have their own variations and their own original styles. And I think that the more that there seems like a lot of people in the city who are playing different kinds of music influenced by that. Influenced by whatever country that either they are from or their parents are from or you know, whatever it is. And I think that it benefits everything to have some of these new to Winnipeg sort of sounds coming in there. How is it easy? I mean, obviously, like you said, you grew up with that. You grew up with gospel. That's part of your musical sort of education or whatever. But do you feel like it's easy to mesh some of those sounds from literally the other side of the world with, you know, more, I guess, Western styles of music? Because I think that's maybe something a lot of people struggle with is taking these two very disparate styles and melding them together in a way that works.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say that it's hard, but I wouldn't say that it's easy. Like, I don't know, like, it's kind of like in between. Because I find that, like, I am South Sudanese, and a lot of the things that I kind of grown up with was very traditional to my tribe, but not the country in general. So that's why it's, like, it's even harder, because each country also has different tribes, which the tribes can be, like, endless. I know in South Sudan, there's over, like, 64 tribes. Each tribe has different kinds of things that they do, different languages. So it's, like, another thing that you also have to apply depending on where you're from. But I think I was just trying to navigate the sounds and the things that I was hearing. And then I was also kind of like spending a lot of time talking to my parents and also being around my family a lot. Like, I have a lot of family members who are in the States who are same tribe as myself. So I spent a lot of time going there for like holidays and stuff like that, and listen to them singing the songs and playing and dancing together and making sure that I'm like so immersed into it. Cause even when I went back home like a couple years ago, I didn't, obviously you kind of have to cherish all the time that you have that's there, because you don't know when you're going to be able to go back again. So
yeah,
I think it's just like a way that I kind of went through it is kind of either using the lyrics or using the text in a way to add on to maybe like something that's a little more Western or a little more, I guess, modern.
Sure.
But then I would also flip it sometimes and use something that's a little more modern and Western with like an African beat or adding the rhythm in a sense, and a way to kind of mesh the two. That's kind of the way that I would view it.
سيران النيل الأبيض الهادي يقودنا إلى المستقبل حتى أحلامنا لا ترفد تكون هذه الأغنية شعار ونور في ساعات الليالي الطويلة المظلمة لجنوب السودان لجنوب السودان تشتعل قلوبنا بالأمل والمحبة التي نتمناها
band Orlands features some familiar faces from the Winnipeg music scene that you may or may not know are originally from the teeming northern metropolis of Flin Flon, Manitoba. Their debut tape was a pleasant surprise this year. It's really good. I've listened to it repeatedly. I keep coming back to it. And it's a really cool project. And so I didn't even know this band existed until they reached out about being on the podcast. And they don't really even have a social media presence to speak of. But the record is available on Bandcamp, was put out by a tape label in, I think, Ontario, if you want a physical copy. And you can also check out the interview, which there's a clip from it here, as well as one of the best songs on the record.
I took my little traveling studio and I went to Scott's first, and we set up in his basement on his little studio there. I recorded him playing to the songs that I had. That session went, that we did like sessions with that, I think, Scott.
Yeah, it was kind of spread out
a little bit. Yeah, didn't take super long time, but it didn't happen really super fast either, though. No. And then from there, I drove up to Flin Flon, which is like, you know, about an 8-hour drive.
Yeah. So
I brought my little recording gear up to Flin Flon and asked Dean if he had a couple of days to spare. So we spent two days, and Dean just like hammered it right out, super profesh. And yeah, so it's a distance kind of a project, but yeah, I think it turned out very well. Obviously, these guys are professionals, so yeah.
That helps, right? Yeah. I guess I do want to get into the content of the music and everything, but how does this distant thing, how does that work for potentially playing this live? Is that in the cards in the future, or is that something that's sort of to be determined at this point?
It'd be very cool. I mean, I think we'd all be down for it, for sure. I think we'd all be down for it. We'd have to hire another guitar player and another singer, I suppose, because there's some layers going on in it. You can't get away from that when we're constructing these songs. So, but yeah, I think we're all down for that, for sure. Maybe we'll just like get more Flin Flon people and become this kind of like, you know, one of those like robots that like can join and
Like Voltron. Yeah, like
they're like Voltron. Yeah.
Still sound. The countdown settled.
Jay Wood is a familiar face and voice on this podcast. He's been on the show, I don't know, five or more times over the past decade. And he's always doing something worth talking about and listening to, including his latest LP, which sort of builds on the genre fluidity of his past releases and leans even more into the hip-hop side of things. And he's another artist who is Winnipeg adjacent in the sense that he's from here. This city very strongly inspires the art that he makes, and he comes back here for shows and other things quite a lot. But he's currently not living in Winnipeg. And so in the interview, which will be linked to in the show notes, we talked about sort of the being a Winnipegger abroad. Not abroad, he's still in Canada, but you know what I mean. And a really good conversation, as always. Really, really great record. And check it out.
This one is definitely a lot more hip-hop leaning. It's a lot more like production heavy. Yeah, it's like every song kind of goes into the next thing. It's very, it's like a kind of narrative concept kind of built-in thing. It's just it's a bit different. It's like pretty much getting what I tried to do on Slingshot, just a bit more right on this one.
That's interesting too, because Slingshot, like, it was very acclaimed. It did very well. No. People really dug it. I mean, so totally. What did you feel after that came out, that there was something that hadn't like sort of achieved what you were hoping to achieve with it?
Yeah, honestly, like, I've listened back a few times. I'm like, oh, it just wasn't like cohesive enough. I felt like everything felt too like this. With this one, it just felt a little more concise, where it felt like all the songs, though they were different, they just lived in the same world, which was the thing I maybe lost sight of while working on Slingshot.
Was that something you did deliberately, like with this one? Like, did you sort of have that in mind when you were putting these songs together?
Big time. Yeah, I think I spent a lot of time this time around, like, actually, like, getting like tones and like texture was a big word this record. I was like, I have to just all give it the same texture, so it like feels like one thing rather than a bunch of different things kind of like collaged into a record type experience. Hey, look here, you snag my
from the back door, always in the view, coming back around. I had to kick my feet up, swerve bad, nigga, maintain it. I had to believe that it wasn't the same with the migraines. So if you ever need to wild out, if you ever need to give no fucks, maybe it's a moment of importance.
puffed out pistachios. And when he blow up, look at me go. If he ask Julio Negro.
Speaking of familiar faces, Rob Crux, as many of you know, was an original co-host of this podcast. He's a frequent guest in more recent years, probably more than anyone else has ever been on the show. And he's also someone I've been friends with for more than 30 years. So I've been listening to music that he's made that entire time. And his latest record, Unhomely, is fantastic. It's heavy and experimental and personal. And it's arguably an EP based on the number of songs, but it seems much more fuller and more accomplished than you would typically think an EP would be. It's a longer running time. So I don't know what to call it. We talked about that on the show. That's not really important, but the subject matter and the thoughts and feelings behind the record are what's important. So there's a clip plus what I think is the best song on the album. And I strongly recommend it. I mean, this one was a really tight race for my favorite of the year with the one you're going to hear next. It was right up there, and it could have been a coin toss, basically. So the home is almost more of a character than the people in it, right? I mean, the name of the record is Unhomely, and, you know, obviously the imagery on the cover and everything, and, like, you're talking about the house pretty heavily sort of throughout the record. And it's interesting for me because, you know, I've known you for 30 years. I remember the house. I mean, you know, I definitely obviously can't immediately connect with all the stuff you're talking about because it's so personal, but the setting is familiar. Yep. And that's not maybe a usual experience to have when you're listening to a record dealing with grief by someone you don't know. Like, so I feel like there's this weird window into it in the sense that, like, the setting, the scene, I can picture the house, and I don't know what that's like to someone who doesn't know you and maybe is hearing this sort of more detached from everything.
Well, hopefully it's, you know, it's like reminiscent of their own childhood homes, or like the sort of like universal childhood home that exists in the collective consciousness or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But like, hopefully that's, I think anytime you make, well, when I make songs anyways, I kind of, I guess I'm kind of, yeah, I'm kind of contradicting myself now because you're hoping that the listener will like be able to put themselves in your shoes, I guess, when you're, writing a song, but can it's a complicated process
for sure. And can you, like, I mean, can you do that without sort of sacrificing some of the personal, like that catharsis thing you mentioned earlier? I mean, like, is there any danger of not danger, but concern over like making it too universal and then maybe not getting out what you need to get out of from it as the creator of it? Or is that even something that doesn't even come to mind?
No, that doesn't come to mind. Like, I think I'm not like, I don't feel like I need to like be faithful to the actual narrative of, yeah, like how it happened. Like, I even know that there's probably some, you know, because like I said, like I'll change stuff to make it more like work with the song more, or like to be like, or, you know, sometimes you'll have personal memories that if you told someone else, it would mean nothing to them. Right. So like you can kind of change things so it does mean so it could like connect to other people easier.
Yeah.
So there's no faith to that narrative, but I think it's just used as like, for one thing, yes, cathartic, but then as you like, you get it, like the way I write stuff like this anyways, is I just like get a bunch of stuff out. So I like write without, almost without like, not like automatic writing, but sort of just writing without really worrying about, how it's going to be in the end. And then I go back and sort of like start like massaging it and reshaping it and putting and moving stuff around it. And then that part of the process, it's like, well, I want it to seem realistic and be like authentic, but I don't really care if it's like the actual like quote unquote truth, you know?
I am thy father's spirit. I am thy father's spirit. I am thy father's spirit. Doomed for a certain term to walk the night. And for the day confined to fast and fires. To the foul crimes done in my days of nature. burnt and purged away.
I woke up from another dream tonight into an empty memory.
Of my body.
This old house is affecting you.
On layers of bone.
I had a rather strange dream about him.
Another skeleton.
I think he came to me and told me.
With no tongue in his skull.
He wasn't dead.
I woke from a dream inside an old grieving house, its tired bones creaking as it breathed in and out. I was tucked in deep like an organ hidden underneath skin, listening within flesh, auscultation in depth. Through walls of sinew, I heard a weary widow sigh heavily and lie her head gently down on a teary pillow. In my ear I could hear the beating of an aching heart, thumping softly somewhere off in the warm and dank and dark. I've woken up, but the dream keeps revolving. Time comes undone and repeats the same moment. I'm in the fog of a haunted unconscious. Whose body is this? Am I the son of the father's illness? I could see it, the blood in the toilet he kept secret to himself. He became thoughtful and quiet, receding somewhere else. Often I would sit with him, not talking, in silence. Not long till I went unacknowledged by him. In the palliative bed, the last of him, so small and so shrunken. His sunken face is stayed and as still as a mountain. I stood in the corner, in orbit like a satellite. His corpse a planet, weighing down time and space around it. I can make no sense of it, or sort out any sort of meaning. Lost faith in words to form sentences or express feeling. I couldn't interpret my own thoughts in a constant state of shock. Couldn't follow anything long enough to give shape to this chaos. Lost and forgotten dreams and screen memories. In the age of disruptions, subjective identity. rootless with no future, a settler on unsettled land, overwhelmed with the pointlessness and the void that is what I am, penniless and broken with no hope and nowhere to go, but back to a home that is no longer a home anymore, where there's ghosts in the halls that whisper my name as we pass by each other on separate planes. When the sky stretches out,
set it right.
I don't think anyone's surprised that Propagandhi's At Peace is at the top of the list. Obviously, they're one of my favorite bands from Winnipeg or anywhere, and At Peace was well worth the long wait that they typically have between records. And although this year I didn't interview any of the, or last year, I guess, I didn't interview any of the band members, I did talk to Greg Soden, who is the host of the Unscripted Moments podcast, and who released a book about the band in 2025. So I've included a clip from that interview, and I think that does a good job of explaining sort of part of the reason that I like this record so much. And some of you may have seen the live show we did to launch Greg's book in Winnipeg, a public domain, back in October. And I talked to him on stage about the book and things like that. But this is from our interview earlier in the year, which wasn't about At Peace, but it was about his podcast, his Propagandhi fandom, and the book that came out. So I think it does a good job in the absence of a recent Propagandhi interview on the show. I think it really works.
We're not going to rush At Peace because the band themselves don't rush. And I think that it's the most appropriate way to follow their model of not rushing brand new stuff because it has to sit.
Yeah.
You know, it has to percolate and relate to our lives, and it has to have new moments where we relate to the songs through lived experiences, where things happen to us while we're listening to the songs in our lives, and then we have new stories to tell about our reactions and relationships with those songs. But time has to pass for that to happen.
For sure. I think you're right about that. I think even with Victory Lap, you know, the one, the previous record, I got it at the release show. I got the copy of the record at the release show. I've listened to it a number of times, obviously, since then. But I still don't know if some of the songs have sunk in to the degree that songs from Failed States or from supporting cast or, you know, obviously the earlier ones have really affected me. I mean, they're great songs. I can sing along to them. I can think about what they mean, but, and I can hear on your show people talking about their own perceptions of it and interpretations of it. But
yeah,
I think it's still, it's one of those bands where you can listen to something from 20 years ago and it can have, depending on where you are in life and how your views have changed and things like that, it can have a deeper meaning and it can sink in maybe a different way. So I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to wait because even with me At Peace, when I got the record, I listened to it a bunch of times, but I was doing other things. I had it on in the background and I had to actually sit down and listen to it with nothing else happening to fully kind of
you know, let them sink in. And then even then, it's going to take a while for sure to fully kind of decide which ones I like, why I like them. And I mean, obviously, you know, this as someone who listens to this band obsessively, like, you know,
yeah.
it takes effort. It actually rewards the listening to Propaganda is rewarding in that, like, you learn something about yourself and about the world and about every time you put the record on.
Yeah, I mean, I got the record in March, too.
Yeah, like you had an advance, right? Yeah, yeah.
Epitaph gave me an advanced copy of the record so that I could do a really cool episode with Jason Livermore, John Paul Peters, and Chris Hanna about the recording, mixing, mastering process of the whole record. And I was like, I have to hear the record before I record with Jason and JP, or it's just not going to make as much sense.
For sure.
So I had to have that initial shock of the first several listens before I talked to Jason and JP. So there's an interview with Chris on that episode as well. And he's the only one that I talked to before I heard the full record.
Okay.
But at Peace, the song was out. But when I talked to JP, I'm like, JP, I am so surprised by this album. And JP's like, me too. So I've been sitting with the record for 2 months longer than other people that got it on May 2nd. And it was still a huge surprise to me. It took me 10, 15 listens to really kind of be like, whoa, start to pick out the little nuances and what I appreciated about it, you know? So it took a while. It takes a while. It is a grower of an album for sure, which is really nice because it requires a little bit of work to sit with it, which is something that modern music obviously discourages people from doing with the breakneck speed that we all consume art and media these days. Sitting with something is very much becoming a lost art. And I love that Propaganda still forces me to do that and not just take the easy way out, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I know we're not here to talk about At Peace, but one of the things I found interesting about the record is, I mean, it is different. It's slower. It's almost more, it's like more pensive. It seems like it's more personal. And a lot of people online have been kind of shitting on it, which is weird to me because I loved it immediately because it was different, right? But it's such a weird band because they've been around for so long. They've had a number of, you know, lineup changes and stylistic changes. And it seems like people are really sort of set in their ways about which era of Propaganda they like or which specific sound they expect from this band. And like, you can watch people yelling at each other on social media about whether it's a great album or a terrible album. And I don't think I saw the same when Victory Lap came out or when Failed States came out. I think it was a little bit more, people were on the same page, but this one has been divisive. And I think that's cool because it is different. There's synthesizer on it. Like, I mean, it's slow. It's cool.
Yeah, I love the divisiveness. I think that's awesome because it reminds me of Potemkin City Limits Part 2, where
for sure.
Like in 2005, when that record came out, people were like, this album sucks.
Yeah.
And so I remember that very clearly.
So do I, for sure.
And I think that I can't remember what episode it was on the podcast that we talked about. I think it was the Cut Into the Earth episode or maybe the Life at Disconnect episode. But this record At Peace to me is if they took Fixed Frequencies, Cut Into the Earth, and Life at Disconnect and made it into an album.
Sure, so that makes sense, yeah.
They have always been the band that they are now. I mean, obviously they've grown and changed, but 20 years ago they were previewing these sounds, you know? So none of this is new. And so for me, I think I said on those episodes, I was like, man, this slower pace and this like more artistic approach to these songs that are less about just being Heshers and more about, you know, taking your time. I could see that being the future of the band. When
these
guys are 60 years old, I could see them being like, Cut Into the Earth is who we are now. Which I, you know, it's crazy to me that actually kind of has happened on this record.
I've had my doubts all along. Your head is bowed, but I don't believe you're really praying, cause I see no sign that you believe a single word you're mumbling. There's nothing that hints you've been touched by the light of an all-loving one, a god of empathy, calling out from the shore, a line for those in need, for ones that you despise. Present to me allegory. Yeah, you're following faithfully, mocking from down below, sniveling in the shadows.
be saved by a final prayer, leaving all your sins behind, approaching the needle's eye, and dropping to endless fire. The dawn of avarice, greed and gluttony, your darkest impulses, the spite. The dawn of avarice, the fire's all consuming.